Hello, this is Tegan again, and this is the third podcast speaking to artists that participated in the Vago Gezi Digital Africa Residency in September 2015. I do just want to add in that Nathan, who I will be speaking to today, and Jeb Chumba from the last podcast on Vago Gezi will be going to Cairo next month. They'll be joining a team that are going to the Cairotronica Festival, and we're really excited about this because Vago Gezi is now a sister festival with Cairotronica, which is another great digital art and technology festival in Cairo. You can find out more about both these festivals on the Vago Gezi and Cairotronica Facebook pages. Today, like I said, I will be catching up with Nathan Gates. This is some months after the festival, and we're going to have a sort of retrospective look at his experiences and the work that he created. In this, I started out by asking Nathan what aspect of the future city or the future Johannesburg he was exploring.
And for me, that was the informal networks that really make a city operate. So it was those things that I was interested in, the kind of informal relationships or ad hoc networks that would be lost when you look towards a futuristic vision of a city.
Why do you think it is that formalizing something or technologizing something means that you have to then like keep it clean and take informality away from it?
That's it. I don't think it does. I just think it's the common conception. It's when technology is brought into a situation, that's its purpose, because that's how it's been most of the time. When computers popped up, it was about being more efficient at work, being able to communicate quicker, faster, you know, storing stuff digitally, that kind of thing. So I think the main conception is always technology is a tool or a business kind of apparatus to make things efficient. And the point is, I think what I try to look at and get across was that is not the only way to engage with technology. And for me, a future vision or a future that I would like to be a part of or would want to bring into existence would be one where we have a more informal relationship with technology.
So you went and looked at Wi-Fi as a kind of informal space. Can you talk to that a bit?
Yeah, so the first thing where that, strangely enough, where I started thinking about the Wi-Fi is there's so many wireless hotspots that you, in Brampton, all over, everyone knows because you're always looking for Wi-Fi that you can never find. It came about when two of the overseas artists were looking to set up their work and said, I think it was just straight off the bat, like, what's the Wi-Fi password? I was like, there is no Wi-Fi. So that's why I started on that bend towards the Wi-Fi.
Before you carry on, let's talk about that expectation a little bit.
Yeah.
This expectation that, I suppose, from people in Europe who do have that kind of access,
yeah,
that you can come to a city like Johannesburg and it will just be there.
One of the quite valuable things of the sort of exchange in the residency is it's people always think that it's like, oh, the person will know something that you don't, that you exchange. But quite often it just allows you to get an external perspective from a situation that you're actually inside of. So I deal with this all the time. Well, everyone deals with it all the time, that you don't have Wi-Fi access, but it's just like, well, that's the way it is. And then you get a glimpse into another situation where that's not the way it is.
From that experience, you went on to look at Wi-Fi a little bit more closely as a kind of system.
Yeah. So I was busy, like everyone on a residency does, walking through the space and experiencing the city, which I'm living. But I was looking at things like robots, the way taxis move through to traffic. It's just, that was interesting. I was like, let's just engage with that and see where it leads. And eventually I was driving around kind of trying to map block for block, just seeing every part of that very small enclosure. And I decided to scan the like Wi-Fi space. And what came out of that was quite a big map of all the Wi-Fi networks I could find driving on a Sunday afternoon in Brampton. And that amounted to about, I want to say 1,000 plus. And that's about a 4-block radius, so 4 blocks on each side of the art museum. So it's not even full Brampton or even close to the city. And ground level. So 1,000 networks and almost all of them were locked. So that, again, it's something we're aware of, but then you start going, wow, all of the stuff is out there and we can't access it. So what is its purpose then? That's where the Wi-Fi thing came in. So it was all the sort of informal networks, finding getting a different perspective on the situation, and actually seeing a quantifiable number of all the networks I am not allowed access to.
And I'm actually quite interested in the notion that you brought up a little bit later about how the Wi-Fi, in effect, is occupying public space. Because we can publicly view all those things, but we still don't have access to them.
The idea is, not the idea, but it got me thinking with Wi-Fi is still taking up public space in a strange way. Because when you scan on your phone, it pops up all the networks that are available in the space that you might not be able to see without the sort of augment of the cell phone are still there, and yet we can't use them, and they still exist in a public domain. And when you can't use them and they still take up space as sort of functional networks, they stop being functional, they become ornaments.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so the idea was that you would basically engage that kind of scripted space, the space that we can see when we try and access the wireless networks on our phones or our other devices. So we can see them, but not necessarily access them, but you wanted to do something with that stuff that we see, right?
Yeah, so move them from the space of like an ornament to something useful and helpful. Well, not even necessarily helpful. I suppose the interest was in using it as a more poetic, let's say, kind of literally, but also in the way that you use it. Because if you couldn't use it to access the internet, what was the value or the function of it? And what got me to thinking about the sort of literal poetic aspect was when you scan them, people have very funny Wi-Fi names. And occasionally they would have, in a row, they would start making sense or make up a sentence or a phrase. The first work was something called, I think I call it the Exquisite Corpse Machine, or Poetic Machine. In a nutshell, it allowed you to create poems using the network names of wireless networks. So like where, you know, your home network's called like John's Wi-Fi, you would use a series of hotspots to communicate a poem to anyone using their mobile device or computer scanning for wireless hotspots. The work allowed you then to play Exquisite Corpse, which is the old Surrealist game. And the phrase you would make up by yourself or with several other people would be broken up and displayed as 6 or 7 different Wi-Fi networks that you could then read as a poem on your phone.
So the Exquisite Corpse one, basically, yeah. If I were using it, I would log on into a little, like a little interface that you designed, yeah. Essentially, that I could access through the network itself.
Yeah.
And then I had options where I could basically go and change the wireless network name to like 6 different things, which essentially would become a poem that then would be the wireless name in the gallery.
Yeah, exactly that. So it followed that same process of logging onto a Wi-Fi network. So you'd log into my Wi-Fi network in this case, which was open. You'd be served with a web page, and then you would have a breakdown of, I used a very classic Exquisite Corpse formula, which was, if I have to think, it's the adjective, noun, verb, the adjective, noun. Probably nothing like that. But yeah, so then you'd have the opportunity to fill that in, either by yourself or passing the phone around to others in the space. And once you'd completed that, that phrase would be broken up into 6 different pieces, and then you would be able to read it as wireless network. So anyone then in the space or in the surrounding area could view the poem through the phone.
Right, cool.
Yeah.
And then that kind of went into the messaging board, which was in the window of the museum, right?
Yeah, so the second part was the messaging board. And that was very much just, when I explained this to people, more than I thought, they got it immediately. Almost everyone understood, like, yeah, we can't access the internet with these wireless networks. Now I can leave messages for people using the wireless network's names. That's quite fun. A sort of look back to the old BBS, the bulletin board systems. That and also the sort of things you get in Pick and Pay, Checkers, where you could actually leave, like, I have a room for rent, or I'm looking for a room, or I need a lift at this time. You leave like postcard messages. So that was installed in the gallery, in the sort of corridor window space of the gallery, where people from outside could still access it. So any time of day or night when the museum was closed, people could come up to it, log in, and leave messages for others, whether they were in the space or not. So, yeah.
Cool. What kind of messages were people leaving?
Weird ones. I'm trying to think. There were some really funny ones. Like the one I remember in particular, it seemed that it was two sisters. And the one sister left a message that said, like, Diane, I miss you and love you. Let me know when you're here. So I think that was in the opening. Someone left a message to go, I'm actually here downstairs in the basement. And when I came back, I doubt it was the sister Diane. It might have been someone else. But they left a message to that going, hi, Diane, you're over it. So it was a lot of weird stuff like that.
Okay, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. It was very much like the comments of any sort of site on the internet.
To explain to someone who knows very little about electronics or networking, how would you describe the kind of technical process that you went through?
It was just things worked out quite well. So they were these very, very cheap wireless modules that popped up a few months before, and I had made some circuit boards to start playing with them, and I ended up having a lot around me. And that's actually, I suppose, contributed to why I went this direction as well. But yeah, so it's programmable, really small routers. So I experimented also with putting individual ones in objects. So they're about the size of a matchbox, probably a lot smaller, and you can stick them in different places. So I had some that I would try putting objects like plugs or under chairs, where you could actually leave notes for people about the object or about the space around the object that it was on.
There was a moment actually in the residency where you were exploring putting them all on little objects, and then if you move the objects around, it actually changed the order of the poem.
Yeah, so when you look at your phone or any device you scan for networks, it normally lists it in from least to most strengths of the signal. So the further away something is, the further down the list it would be. So yeah, that was one thing I played with, by sticking it into a whole bunch of objects that you would find in your house, and people could move that around the space. And one side there was a big projection of the list of Wi-Fi networks that I could pick up in the gallery, and then you could actually rearrange the network names in that way as well.
Oh, that's really fun. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, there was also playing around with putting it in public spaces like coffee shops, those sorts of areas, with the intent of like double coding a space. So it's one thing from one perspective, but if you looked at your phone, you got a different insight into the same situation. I think that also shaped a lot of what I was doing, where with the messaging board, you know, you could be at night, it would probably function as a great way to sell drugs, you know, but you wouldn't know that unless you were in on it, like part of the game.
For you as a digital artist, and I'm going to use the term like broadly now, because we don't have a lot of definition for what a digital artist actually is, but you work quite a lot with electronics and with little circuit boards and stuff like that. Why is it that you do that?
So on a very practical level, it gives me two entry points to an idea or a work or a process, because I can work in the physical space where it's building circuitry or manipulating physical objects. And then there's the other side where you're programming those things. And in a lot of the work, it's obviously there's programming involved, but there might also be screen-based things or things that are just software. So it just gives me two ways to explore my thinking. The other one is I'm a very crafty person. Not like sneaky, yeah. But I'm very attracted to materials. And often the way I work is not necessarily with an end game in mind. It's through a process of like experimentation and playing with things. So a lot of what I try to do is I'll treat ideas as objects that you can also manipulate, pull apart to understand better. And that translates really well, obviously, to physical objects.
I suppose we also are surrounded by electronic things all the time. I mean, literally every household has a little bit of circuitry somewhere, a little LED coming on somewhere. And I quite like the idea that artists are actually willing to engage with that stuff and pull it apart and do stuff with it.
Yeah, it's really part of our material world now. That like everything has embedded electronics somewhere. And a lot of the interesting stuff, so you say LEDs just in the middle of your house, like domestic objects are becoming smarter. and they have a very interesting place in a household, and that shifts when they start becoming smarter, or when possibly you can play with them and fiddle with them in a way that, you know, wasn't always available to you now that they're electronic.
This is super interesting, and I could have this conversation with Nathan for the entire afternoon, but I've got to end it somewhere. And this is a good point to end. As artists, we all should be thinking about the things around us and what we can do with them. And I think Nathan has given us a really, really good understanding of how that can happen in a really gorgeous project with these wireless networks. And I'm excited to see what happens in Cairo. Thanks for listening, and please stay to hear the experiences of all four residents in their time in Johannesburg with the Fagugezi Digital Africa Festival. Thanks to the Wits Art Museum for their support and for hosting us, and funding in support of the residency from the SA and UK seasons 2014 and 2015.